This episode is brought to you by Saks.com. At Saks.com, it's easy to find your new vibe. Dive into the Western trend with gold cowboy boots from Staud, or go full 90s throwback with platforms from Prada. You can shop for everything on your agenda, whether it's a breezy Zimmermann dress for a garden party or a bright Chloe blazer for brunch. Find inspiration for your new vibe every day at Saks.com.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Welcome to another Mother Runner. This is Sarah Bowen Shea. I'm joined today by Dimity McDowell. Hello, Dimity.
Hello. Here with my bunions and all. Spoiler alert.
Yeah, spoiler alert. We're talking about the sexy topic of bunions today.
I just wanted to let you know they showed up to the party as well. They didn't stay in bed.
Excellent, excellent. Well, I adore our guests, so I am very much looking forward to this conversation. But you and I, we're going to see each other IRL very soon, next week.
IRL, I know, in Redmond, Oregon. Looking forward to it.
Mm-hmm. It's going to be great. Our retreat, and in the high desert of Oregon. Tim, have you, you've been to Bend, right? Which is near Redmond, or no?
You know, I don't know.
Because I know the first time I ever went to Bend was on a press trip, a Nike press trip, and I'm just trying to remember if you were on it or not.
Where does the Hood to Coast end?
No, it ends at the coast. It ends out at Seaside, Oregon, and it starts near Hood River. It starts at Timberline Lodge.
Yeah. As far as I remember, I've never been to Bend.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, the high desert is just supremely lovely. And our host hotel, oh my gosh, you're never going to want to leave your room practically. It's so tranquil and, you know, has kind of milky white walls and white linens. And oh, it's just really stupendous.
Can't wait.
And your favorite, lots of hiking.
We're going to hike 8 miles together. That is, I am the group leader. I'll hold the balloon or hold the umbrella at the front. Don't lose me. It's going to be fun. It's going to be really great. It's a different vibe, right? Mm-hmm, Usually we have a race, but we decided to switch it up a little bit and do a little bit more kind of outdoor adventure, including Sarah. You want to talk about the boating?
Yes, the canoeing.
Going on a yacht?
Yes. No, we are not going out with Jeff Bezos and his new fiance.
I was going to say Jeff Bezos yacht. Yeah.
We both listened to the same NPR story. So we're going canoeing and on a high alpine lake, so super clear water. One of them, it sort of depends on where we'll go, is based on the weather and how much snow melt there's been. And one of them could be in the caldera of a volcano.
I don't even know what that word is, Sarah.
Oh, it's the part of a volcano that has erupted that is the crater,
like,
that is left.
Like the lip part?
No, the inside the lip, the crater part.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. 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 So to me, the lip would be the perimeter of it. So
yeah. Yeah. So it's basically like the lip is like it's the edge, and then we're going in the little bowl. That's what the caldera is. Mm-hmm. Oh, wow. Okay. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
I'm gonna pull that out. That 25-cent vocab word.
I mean, Crater Lake here in Oregon is probably best known.
Crater Lake. I've never put that together. Well, I always think of a volcano like a mountain. Like, I always feel like it's like something, and I realize that it's really tall, you know? Mm-hmm. But I guess it must be, I mean, you have to climb up to Crater Lake, but it can't be that tall. I don't know. I guess I just need to kind of see the landscape.
And Crater Lake is, which we are, for the record, we are not going to Crater Lake because that's more in Southern Oregon, but are on the way to Southern Oregon. It's not too far from Bend, actually. But anyway, Crater Lake is only fed by rainwater. There are no tributaries into it and none coming out of it. So
it really is a bowl.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. So it's rain and snow melt and snow, I guess, that falls onto it. So
yeah, I was about to say, but the snow melt couldn't, because that would be a river.
Right? Well, right. But I mean, the snow that falls on the sides then goes into the, melts down into it. Yes. But it, so nothing's feeding it. But anyway, so, but there are other such lakes that probably might be, I don't know if they're spring fed or not. But so, yes. So one of the two lake choices could possibly be in a volcano. Yes.
And I mean, is this something that we could like jump in, or is it going to be just wicked, wicked cold?
It's going to be super chilly, but you know me and water, I'm going in for sure.
Yeah, like, yeah. I think I'm going to bring my suit because I love getting in cold water.
Adore it. Oh my gosh. And I have started my mainly taking just lukewarm showers that then get progressively colder during the 3 to 4 minutes that I'm in there. But I love just finishing with really cold water in a shower time of year. Well,
Sarah, we just did that challenge in Many Happy Miles. That was our challenge in May, is to take a plunge. I mean, that's so funny. Yeah, we turn it down and try to like hang in there for, I mean, like 30 seconds, a minute, like whatever feels good, you know?
Oh, I love it. I love it. Yes. So, refreshing. I've been open water swimming 3 times this year, and I was afraid that I wouldn't get in the pond until June because we had such a stinking cold, wet winter and spring, like I know you did out there in Denver. Mm-hmm. And the first time Molly and I went in, we're like, it feels too warm. But then I went on Sunday and it felt just deliciously kind of a little
perfect
this side of Chile. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Good. So it was quite good. Yeah. So I'm quite excited for our retreat. It'll be a bit bittersweet because we just announced that we are taking a hiatus from retreats in 2024. So we have this retreat and then we have Hilton Head, November 3rd through 6th, off the coast of South Carolina. This will be our third time going back there. So we know that it is stupendous. And so folks, if you've listen to us talk about retreats ad nauseum here on this podcast and thought, oh, I always want to go to one. Well, that's the one to go to because we don't know when our next one after that is going to be. So definitely look for it on anothermotherrunner.com under events and read about and sign up because get it while the getting is good.
Sure, so, sure. Yeah, absolutely.
Yes, yes, yes. Yes. Well, as Dimity said earlier, we're talking about bunions today, and our guest is Amy Benton, a doctor of physical therapy and co-owner of Prime Performance Physical Therapy here in Portland. In full disclosure, I originally met Amy when my 17-year-old son, John, started seeing her for some issues he had, as Amy is known as the preeminent physical therapist for dancers here in Portland. Amy herself was a professional dancer before becoming a physical therapist, and now she works with a variety of female athletes, as well as a few male ones as well. Amy is also the mother of 2 school-age kids, as well as a runner, and she's joined us to talk primarily about that super sexy topic of bunions. So thanks so much for joining us, Amy.
I'm excited to be here. Thank you.
Yeah, yeah. So before we talk about your running and then feet problems, you got to share with us about your dance background, especially the part where you were performing on silks, suspended from trees, while pregnant.
Yeah. So grew up dancing and decided to go to college as a dance major and continue that training, and then moved to Boston, became a professional dancer in a local company, touring throughout New England. I wanted a liberal arts education as well as a dance career, so I cobbled together both, burning the candles at both ends in life, but it was a ton of fun. Finished my degree, doctorate in physical therapy from Simmons, and then headed back to the West Coast and hit Portland and had to decide which companies I was going to dance with. And an aerial company said, well, if you dance with us, we'll train you on the silks. So my aerial career began, spent 4 seasons with AWOL, Aerial Without Limits dance company here in Portland. And, you know, the 4th season, I was wearing this very tight, purple, shiny unitard and working on a piece. And I became, you know, pretty tired, and my purple uniform got tighter and tighter. Just feeling more like a grape than a dancer. And I went to the doctor and I was like, it's got to be my thyroid. You know, I hear that this is a thing. It slows down. You gain weight. You're tired. And she ran some tests and she's like, no, you're pregnant. And the show was, you know, 2 weeks away. So I found that I was 6 weeks along and decided, okay, well, well, let's just do this. And I'll bring my baby with me into the air, into those motions. And so I performed, you know, rigged high in the air with no mats. But I finished out that show and it felt wonderful. And then I could put dancing on the shelf for a little bit while I started a family.
Nice. Did you ever get, was like morning sickness a thing when you were pregnant?
Yeah, a little bit. Yeah. Nothing
like,
too
when,
crazy.
When going upside down in the silks, would that like, cause I kind of get a little, you know, get that like, even on a swing set, you know, you get that little like flutter in your belly, you know, I'm like, I don't know if I can do that when I'm pregnant.
Oh, absolutely. The vestibular system, the inner ear system is the most highly trainable system of the body. So, you know, for years we worked on spinning tolerance and being able to be in X, Y, and Z planes in the air while spinning. So my bandwidth for spinning and turning and twisting was really high at that stage, which maybe helped with the morning sickness.
There you go. All right. I love it that you have an explanation, like your vestibular system. I love that. All right. Well, so you get out of the silks and you hit the pavement. Tell us a little bit about your running.
Yeah. So I picked running up after working the Boston Marathon medical tent. I was in Boston for 7 years, going through undergrad and then grad and then doctorate. And I was inspired by these amazing people, both recreation and professional, that ran the Boston Marathon, just their endurance and their intensity and their love for the sport. So I was healing from a hip injury and decided to cross train from my dancing, cross train with running. And I just fell in love with it. The freedom of it. It's so easy right at your doorstep. I was in Boston at the time. So running around Fenway Park, and I got to see the city really quickly, right? It sped up my adventure with it. And, you know, 1 mile became 3 or 4, 5 or 6, and did a few 5Ks here and there, but really love to run. It's just freedom.
Totally. And so it sounds like you kind of always knew that you wanted to be a physical therapist, or at least when you got to college. So what was interesting about that to you?
I had touched base with PT through my dance training. Dancers, 90% will have contact with an allied healthcare professional at some point in their training. And so injuries found me, you know, a patient of PT. And it seemed like a natural progression of a profession. I already knew intrinsically so much about my body through training. Sure. And thought that that would be a really great career to either supplement dance or be the second career, because every dancer has a second career. You can't dance forever. And so that was a great fit. I just get to play and dance and move all day with my patients. It's really a labor of love.
It does come through in your work. I should say that you and I are working together on some of my back issues, as well as a couple other misalignments in my body. And it's, I really enjoy our sessions so much. So you mentioned that you took up running for cross training to dance. And so before we focus on feet, you know, can you talk about why you strongly advocate cross training for runners and dancers, the ones you work with, as well as yourself?
Yeah. Running is a multi-joint sport. But first and foremost, it goes anterior posterior, unless you are training highly on varied ground. So to create balance around the muscles, ligaments, and joints of the body, it's really important to work in all the different planes of the body so that you have balance to the joints for longevity, injury prevention. So often I end up giving my dancers who stand in turnout all day long and are working their joints the same way for hours at a time, runner-based exercises in turned in or parallel, they'll call it. And I give my runner patients more dance-based exercises. So they get their hips out of that straight plane movement. So the cross patterning is really fun to play with, but it ultimately creates balance, longevity of your joints, and variety in movement.
If somebody's listening and they are a 5-6 day a week runner, what kind of cross training would you recommend for them?
Weightlifting, especially as women, is very important. I follow the work of Stacey Sims. So your targeted lower extremity, upper extremity weightlifting twice a week, maybe 3 times a week, depending on your goals for running. another type of cardiovascular endurance training, so long, slow distance or HIIT workouts, can be an added benefit to create power and cardiovascular longevity. Swimming, biking, anything that gets them out of their normal running gait. Tennis, pickleball. I know we have a fan in here. Oh, and, you know, just throwing around a frisbee. You know, the Danish youth play ultimate frisbee first as a way to become athletically inclined because it works on multiple dimensions of the body. You're throwing, you're high, you're low, you're right, you're left, you're everywhere. So it just creates that well-roundedness. So I try and think about what are the different angles that we can put the body through so that everything is working as a team.
Mm, cool. Cool. All right. Well, let's get down, speaking of everything working as a team, let's get down to the root, our feet. Just in case you don't know what a bunion is, Amy, can you tell us what a bunion is and how someone would know? I mean, I think it's pretty, I think you pretty much know just by looking, but talk about what it is.
Yeah. A bunion is, if you were to take a pencil and place it on the top of your big toe, on the top of your foot, and if your toe is deviating into the little toes and no longer in that straight line that that pencil holds, you might have the beginning of a bunion, which is where the great toe begins to cave inward or arc towards the little toes. And there's a variety of reasons this happens, but you also begin to get more forces and wear on the outside of that big toe. And when the angle gets to be about 20 degrees, one, you'll notice it by then. And two, we start to have a bony callus that can develop on that big toe knuckle because it's wearing up against your shoes. And so that can become pretty painful, as well as the decreased mobility of that big toe joint to move back into alignment of that pencil alignment.
There you go. So there are like baby bunions. I have two bigger bunions, but are there some that aren't as pronounced that don't hit that 20 degree angle, or is that the natural evolution of one?
Yeah, it can start out slow and then advance based on shoe wear and training and tightness of the foot and ankle. Injuries can really set that off. If you have an ankle sprain, that can change the forces around the ankle and promote that big toe caving in towards the little toe. But the bunionette that you were mentioning is the pinky toe, the fifth toe, can also start to cave in towards the other toes. And you can get a callus or a bone buildup on that, the base of that little toe.
So as I had never heard the term bunionette before yesterday when I was writing the notes for this show. And so is that the same as a hammer toe? Because I have, both my little toes are hammer toes, and I had unsuccessful surgery on my right little toe when I was in my 20s to try to correct it.
Yeah. So bunionette is different than a hammer toe. And hammer toe is when the toe starts to curl under and the second joint of that toe pops up. And so I work with hammer toes all the time. So what I've found is that when the foot, you have you've got a ton of muscles in your foot, but there are long flexors and short flexors. So if you were to curl your toes, like you're going to pick up a sock with your foot, those are your short flexors that curl the toe under. When those are either tight or weak or both, they can pull too much, creating that bend in the toe. And then the wear and tear of your shoe on the top of that toe joint can get blisters, redness, pain, swelling. So how we go about treating those is we massage and lengthen and work on the short flexors on the bottom of your foot. We massage those out, get them nice and long. Mobilize the joints of the toes so that they can move into a position where you have a mechanical advantage for the muscle to work. And then we work on specific exercises to lengthen and strengthen those toes.
Wow.
Sounds like we got some work ahead of us, Amy.
I got you.
Can you take, I mean, can you make a hammer toe flat again?
Oh, yeah.
I mean, like take a flat iron. Oh, yeah. Like it's no problem.
When
oh.
I was reading through the basic reading that, you know, you Google bunion, right? And they're like, okay, here's the things you can do for it. Not one website mentioned physical therapy or strengthening your feet. Oh. I do this all day, every day. I take ballerinas that have been squashing their feet in pointe shoes for 10 years, and I can literally get them a different foot shape with specific exercises, hands-on massage and mobilization. Yeah, you can reverse this stuff. And why is that not a part of the team approach with the healthcare professionals that see this? So,
well,
you can reverse it.
That's a bigger question. But yeah, I mean, the reason why I wanted to co-host this podcast with Sarah is because I had bunion surgery back. So I have two kids. One's almost 20. So my bunion surgery is probably 19 years old. So what happened? Probably you see this a lot, Amy. My feet spread, right, with pregnancy.
Yep.
When I had my first kid. And my feet are already quite large and I have trouble finding shoes to begin with. And I was like, oh my gosh, I cannot be a wide as well. And it hurt. My foot really hurt when I was running. And so I went to, you know, I went to the first podiatrist I could find. It was in Santa Fe, so a limited market. And I just expected to come out and have a pencil, like to pass the pencil test you were just talking about. And that was such not the case. And oh my gosh, the recovery from that is probably one of the most painful things I can think of. I mean, it was so bad.
Mm.
So can you just talk a little bit about why surgery, from what Sarah's told me, you don't really believe in surgery, right? For bunions.
There's a time and a place for every procedure,
of course.
Right?
Yeah.
So I really take a good crack at changing the position of the toes and treating the foot and the ankle and how you use your foot first before I would refer out surgically. And I don't think that that is common knowledge in this space. I think people say, oh, wow, I've got that bunion. I think, you know, the only way to fix it is surgically. But there are some amazing podiatrists here in Portland that I work with that take a more conservative approach and work with the rehab process, especially before. Let's see how good we can get it and get you pain-free and moving and walking before we go under the knife. And then after surgery, why are we not rehabbing these feet that the muscles get smaller, they atrophy? Their line of force has changed because they've moved bones. So we need to re-educate that whole system so that it plays up the chain through your knee, hip, and low back better than you were before. Not just, hey, let's slice and dice and then hope it's, you know, good. It's not going to be. So I'm sorry about that experience.
That's okay. I mean, I've learned a lot. I mean, I didn't do either. I didn't do anything on either side, but I also didn't know to do that, right? Like that wasn't an option, you know? So I was like, again, I was looking for, I think what a lot of people look for was just like, you know, salvation in a surgery room, you know?
Absolutely. Well, I hope this inspires other runners and movers to at least try the conservative pathway because it can work.
What are some of the non-invasive techniques? I mean, I've seen some pictures of taping and you posted that Instagram post and showed it looked like that woman had some tape on her feet and you talked about doing stretches and strengtheners. What are some of the things that can work non-surgically?
Yeah, absolutely. So mentioned before, taking the tissues of the foot and the ankle and optimizing their pathway. So that's through massage, either hands, tool assisted, cupping. There's a lot of strategies that we use, mobilizing the joints, making sure each joint, there's, you know, 26 bones in the foot, making sure each joint is moving well. And then once the path is cleared for good movement, or while the path is being cleared, we work on exercises to lengthen and strengthen the toes. if that joint needs help with realignment and it's just not anywhere near that pencil test, I do use a variety of taping techniques to aid in the activation of the certain muscles. Like there's a muscle on the side of the toe that can pull it outward away from the little toes. And so we, you know, slap on either dynamic tape or kinesio tape to help awaken or get your brain's attention to that big muscle so that you can use that muscle to help pull intrinsically that toe back into alignment. From there, it's really important. So in regards to the Instagram post, that woman had come to me with an ankle sprain. And through her rehab of a basic ankle sprain, she couldn't balance on one leg because that toe would keep caving in, pulling her arch down. She had hip issues because of that. She had inside knee issues. And so I said, hold up, we got to go back down to that toe. And it's going to take another, you know, maybe a little longer in this rehab process, but let's do this right the first time. And so we went to work on the foot and ankle, massaging, mobilizing, taping, cueing, little teeny toe exercises to big ankle exercises. We do a little bit of all of them. And eventually that toe started to realign because she had some flexibility in that joint that we could play with. And before you know it, she was running pain-free for the first time in 20 years. It was dramatic. It was great.
That's so cool. That's so cool. Well, we have a membership program here called Many Happy Miles, and we have a physical therapist in there that helps us, gives us kind of a move of the month. And last month was toe yoga, I mean, which seems very aligned, right? And yes. I mean, honestly, so it's pretty simple, Amy. I mean, you probably explain it better than I can, but you basically like push down your big toe, let the other four rise, and then alternate, right? Push down the four and let the big toe rise.
Yes.
Using your hands if you need to manipulate if your toes are stuck like mine are. And holy cow, like my foot was so sore after the first time we demonstrated it. I was like, okay, so this might be something that I need to do a little bit more often. But even just something as basic as that, I mean, we've been doing it pretty regularly and it does it. My foot feels freer and like has more space in it.
Oh my gosh. Let me add to that. So the next one I would play with is if you can start seated, you're going to put a light TheraBand around the big toe while you're, so the you wrap the TheraBand under the big toe, kind of spread it out so it doesn't get too crunched. So it's really on the pad of the toe. Light is like a yellow or red band. Don't put a whole lot of tension on it, but as you're sitting there and you're holding one strand of the TheraBand in each hand, so you can see your big toe, you've got the tension on it. And if you have any deviation or movement in that big toe joint already towards a bunion, you can use the TheraBand to help place that toe in optimal alignment. And then you're just going to stamp the toe down against the TheraBand, so down onto the ground, and hold it. And this creates alignment and it starts to work on the long flexors of that big toe, the ones that plant our foot down and then we press off of it when we run. So now that you've got the activation or their awareness of the toes and the yoga toe, this starts to build a little bit more strength of that big toe. So you've got the alignment and the muscle working for you.
Yeah, I like the idea of stamping it. So like the idea is like you're putting it in the right place and kind of, you know, having some muscle memory there, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm. Cool. Mm.
All right. Well, we got to take a quick break to hear from the folks who allow us to bring you this free content. Please support them like they support us.
This episode is brought to you by Saks.com. At Saks.com, it's easy to find your new vibe. Dive into the Western trend with gold cowboy boots from Staud, or go full 90s throwback with platforms from Prada. You can shop for everything on your agenda, whether it's a breezy Zimmermann dress for a garden party or a bright Chloe blazer for brunch. Find inspiration for your new vibe every day at Saks.com.
Yeah. Okay, so Amy, you're the one who suggested this topic of bunions, and as you know, I hadn't really met you for more than about 90 seconds when I brought John in, and I was kind of like skeptical slash skittish. So I was like, okay, how about I ask our Facebook community and ask them whether they think it's a good idea or too gross. And I was kind of shocked by the response. I mean, it was overwhelming. They were like, talk about bunions. So it makes me think that bunions must be super common among women. And are they more prevalent among runners and other active folks? Or is it something that you get regardless of your level of activity?
Yeah, apparently 100 million people will deal with bunions. It is a, wow. It is a shared experience across the life spectrum. And something
so warm and fuzzy,
We just hide it. Why hide it in the shoe? Nobody will see. But yeah, a third of adults over 65 will have a bunion. I mean, that's huge numbers. We do know there's a genetic component. So about 70% of people with a family history will experience a bunion. But I will say this, my grandmother and my mother both had bunions. I was a dancer, stuck my feet in point shoes for 10 plus years in point shoes. But I created a foot posture that is, I don't have bunions. I think it's that nature versus nurture, or nature and nurture, that you really, how you use your feet and your body is how it can be built up. So yeah, sure, it could be genetic, but I think there's things you can do about it and you can fix it and help realign it. But it's a popular issue.
Yeah, genetics for sure. I will have to say, I think my dad and my sisters have them as well. So what are some early stage precautions women can take to try to sidestep getting bunions? Like, I mean, obviously, I think heels are an issue. Like you talked about those pointy shoes.
Yeah, you know, wear and tear, right? So wide toe box in your shoes. I have kind of three rules that I send my athletes off when they're looking for new shoes, that they have a wide toe box. So I use an insole test. They take out the insole of the shoe, they put it on the ground, and you stand on it. And if your toes, your big toe and your little toe, are just falling off the edge of it, that shoe is probably not designed to give your toes room to work optimally in the shoe. So
you're talking about standing on top of the laces, right? Like you're crushing the shoe.
So take the insole out of the shoe.
Yep.
Oh, and you put it on the
insole.
Ground.
Yep. Oh, you're standing on the insole, not the shoe itself. Okay, I'm
right,
sorry.
Right. I mean, okay. You know, you can flip over the shoe and stand on that.
I'm sure they'd really treat you kindly at this. You like go on stomping on their brand
just
new shoes. Yeah.
Hitting the shoes on the ground. Yep. She'll be here all day, folks. So we look for a wide toe box. We look for a straight shoe. So sometimes shoes are designed so they have this curve in it. Preference is a straight last. And a zero drop, if possible. Mm. A lot of shoes are built up with a little bit of a high heel or a 10 millimeter lift to the heel. And that can change what's happening at the big toe. So straight across. My favorite shoes that I have found are Ultras. They come in a variety of low, medium, high cushion. But ultimately, they follow those three rules. And you have plenty of room for your toes to spread and move as designed.
We'll have to introduce you to Topo because they are preferred and they have very wide toe boxes and all the characteristics you talk about. So I will show you my running shoes sometime.
Please.
So on my first visit to you, you suggested that the issues that sprung from my bulging disc could have affected the formation of my kind of pre-bunions. And you alluded to that with the woman that you showed on Instagram recently that it seemed like her ankle injury kind of exacerbated her bunion issue. So can you talk us through how kind of that chain of kinetics works?
Absolutely.
Why it makes it something bulge out in your foot because I got bulging discs, you know, or whatever it is.
Yeah. I mean, to keep it simple, in your case, Sarah, there's a potential leg length discrepancy. Mm-hmm. The longer leg will tend to be the arch of the foot will more collapse to the ground. That moves the big toe closer to the little toes because you're taking off from a more flattened or pronated foot position, which can exacerbate the bunion. Then up the chain, it can change the torque or twist of the lower leg bone, the tibia, which can then put more force on the medial joint of the knee and that meniscus, which can then change the rotation of the femur and start affecting how the hip glides and slides in the socket, which then can change how your sacrum and your SI joint and low back start to have a conversation. And that can affect the joints, the discs, the nerves of the low back. So I am so passionate about this big toe conversation because I see this kinetic chain issue all day long. And we bring it back down to the ground and how the toe is aligned, hitting the ground and transferring the weight up through these joints. They are all connected and all having a conversation together. And so it can really make or break that chain.
I like you saying having a conversation because it's so easy to see our body as just like separate islands. There's my feet, there's my knees, and to think that they're all communicating and that when one of them is having a bad day, it kind of ripples up and sullies the entire conversation. And for me, it goes on for too long. So, wow. All right.
Absolutely.
Switching topics a tiny bit. One woman on our Facebook page confessed she thought what was a bunion was actually arthritis. So how can folks tell the difference, or are they related, or can you kind of talk about that relationship?
Yeah. Arthritis is kind of the breakdown or wear and tear of the articular cartilage within the toe joint. And that can create different angles of the joint. Oftentimes, yes, that bunion or that angle of that hallux valgus, we call it, will be exacerbated. Just because she has arthritis doesn't mean that I would treat it similarly in terms of trying to offload the part of that joint that is breaking down. Let's offload and share some of that load by getting that joint in a better alignment. But when you have arthritis, it can exacerbate the breakdown of the joint, leading to the stronger angle they see. And here's where if orthotics and taping and toe spacers and all the manual work can't help, that's when we start thinking about surgical intervention for help. But primarily, people just want to get out of pain. So we're going to try to do everything we can to help that joint be supported and well aligned, even if arthritis is in the picture.
Okay. Well, if your bunions don't hurt, I meant to ask this earlier, if your bunions don't hurt anymore, like, then just let them be. I mean, I obviously work on the toe mobility and the stuff that we talked about, but like me wearing shoes anymore is not an issue. Like, you know, like when it first hurt.
No, that's wonderful. But remember the whole conversation up and down that leg.
Of course. Yes. Yeah. Yeah. But, yes.
But I'm glad it doesn't hurt. That's a win-win.
That is a win. But yes, you saying that, and yeah, the conversation, the kinetic chain conversation is super helpful.
So Amy, you mentioned a couple foot accessories there, you know, the insoles or orthotics, the taping, that thing. So we got some questions about that on our Facebook page, including this is not an accessory. This is the opposite of it. Going barefoot, is that a good thing or a bad thing? Because I definitely have avoided it for a number of years because of two bouts of plantar fasciitis.
Yeah, if you can tolerate barefoot walking around your home, in your grass, absolutely. It gives the foot a chance to realize the space that it can take up and all the muscles to work. When we stick it in a rigid, unmoving environment, the muscles go to sleep. They're like, cool, you don't need me as much. I'm going to be here. But if you get those toes out in the real world and walk around, you're using more foot intrinsics and more foot and ankle muscles, and arguably more muscles up the chain for your knee and your hip and your back. Mm-hmm. Now, we're designed to walk on warm, gushy ground, right? Not hardwood floors per se. And especially as we get older, the calcaneal fat pad, the heel pad gets thinner. Some of our tissues get a little bit thinner, so we feel that hardwood floor more. And then, you can have secondary issues like plantar fasciitis. So if there's a way, using slippers that are minimal. So you've got some padding underneath your feet, but your feet are still able to spread out would be a nice ideal. Wool socks that aren't too restrictive to your toes can be a nice alternative as well.
Okay. So what about some things that are accessories, like three things that come to mind? You mentioned orthotics or like inserts and also toe spacers. Like, can you kind of run through those three things and when and if they make sense?
I used Correct Toes for a long time. So the toe spacers are a good start to getting used to spreading your toes out and getting your toes used to working at a different angle. People would bring me the Correct Toes that were actually made by a local podiatrist here in Portland who I do work with on a regular, really great design. But they'll bring me the Correct Toes and then I will slice and dice them because they're not created for you yet. It's a model. So I customize and personalize those Correct Toes so that they fit comfortably in between the toes. A lot of people say, oh, I tried them and they slipped right out or they irritate my skin. And yes, they can do all of that if they're not carved out for you. So bring in your Correct Toes. We will make them fit like a glove so that you do wear them. But that's only just to get yourself aligned. You have to add the exercises with the Correct Toes. Otherwise, you're just shoving the joint in a position and it's like, meh, okay, I'm over here now. Sweet. That doesn't, you know, help me do anything. So bracing, but strengthening while bracing is optimal. Same thing for orthotics. If I can find a super feet orthotic that works for somebody over the counter, really quick, great. But more complex feet and ankles or bunion angles need custom fit orthotics, which can be a little bit more pricey, but can be a game changer. For instance, you know, I have one leg longer than the other. I had a little bit of that collapsing in of that arch, and I just worked with a local PT to get custom fit orthotics that accounted for the leg length discrepancy and supported the toes and, you know, running pain free for years and years and years. I mentioned taping, but you can also get a single toe spacer just between the big toe and the second toe. And that can be really helpful. But again, add the smartness and the strength to the system, and you won't need those toe spacers for life. It's just a temporary guide for your brain to figure out where should my toes optimally live.
I got the sense on the Facebook thread that people are wearing those, the spacer that's just between the big toe and the second toe. I got the sense that people are wearing those in their running shoes while they run. Is that your sense too?
They can, depending on the angle of that bunion or the migration of the big toe. I find that taping, if you can, I can teach you how to tape your toe, and there's just less bulk in the shoe. But again, I think people are given the toe spacers. They're like, this is the solution, but they have to go to like chapter two, which is get your body strong enough to pull your toe back into alignment. And then you just own that new big toe. You don't have to mess with any other accessories. You're good.
I want to own my big toe. That's my goal with you, Amy. I want to own my big toe.
Oh yeah.
We enough got of this that. Renting my big toe thing. I am on a path to owning it.
Yeah, man, it's borrowed time.
Right. It sometimes feels that way. So you mentioned already looser socks, and somebody on our Facebook page talked about that she wears looser fitting socks and laces her running shoes differently. So what are your thoughts on those options?
Is just nice. I like her intuitive problem solving. She's like, well, we're just going to be wearing big floppy socks all over the house. That's great. Yeah, you know, it's simple. If you compress all the toes, they're going to get more crowded, and, you know, bunions love a crowded situation. But with the lacing of the shoes, if you don't tighten where the toe box and you leave that a little bit looser in the laces, and then you tighten, make it tighter up towards your ankle, that'll give the toe box more room to spread out so that your toes have more room to work. Absolutely.
Right on. So is there anything bunion related you think that we haven't covered? the big open-ended.
I know, right? I read an article when I was a new grad after seeing a patient with fresh from a bunionectomy surgery. And the article was talking about how after surgery, you never place weight on your first toe the same way ever again.
Mm.
And something like 60 to 70% of post-surgical cases. And this just blew my mind to think that you will forever not be able to get that toe down and strong, which plays its role up the kinetic chain. So the fact that, you know, the compressive forces on the foot when you're standing, the rear foot has most of it, 60%, but the forefoot, the toes of 28%, and you have to lever through that big toe to run. So I'm just a strong proponent of catching the bunion before it gets worse, you know, mm-hmm. that pencil test, and trusting the PT journey a little bit to help you realign and optimize where that big toe is in your shoe so that you can run and not have hip, knee, back issues.
Mm-hmm. And do you think, I think you are a wonder physical therapist. But do you think that there's physical therapists across the country that also have this in kind of seems to me an enlightened version of the ability to turn back the clock on bunions and other kind of, you know, hammer toes and bunionettes and all those things? I mean, do you think people who are listening are going to be able to find someone who can work with them on this?
That's such a good question. I worried about that. Since having such an innate relationship with the foot as a dancer, honestly, mm-hmm. there are some amazing dance-based physical therapists all over the country. They're the PTs that are going to know all about feet. We have unique tips and tricks and exercises that you are not going to find in your average toolbox for physical therapy. Mm-hmm. So if you're looking for somebody just a little bit more skilled on the foot and ankle, mm-hmm. dance physical therapists, mm-hmm. for sure.
That's a great suggestion.
Good. All right, Amy. Well, I look forward to my next visit with you. Thank you for talking with us about this super sexy topic.
Absolutely. It was my pleasure. You guys are fun.
Thanks so much, Amy.
Dimity.
Yeah.
What are you and your bunion thinking?
Oh, that I need to do more toe exercises, which is, I totally agree with it. It's just, it's like another thing to add to the list, right? Along with mobilizing my back and opening up my thoracic spine and, you know, foam rolling my adductors. And I mean, and I get it. That's what happens. That's the beauty of having a body that is still working pretty well and you want to continue to have it work well. I mean, it's the price of admission these days, right?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. The laundry list just gets longer and longer. Yeah.
But I'm already like, oh gosh, I want to go get, the TheraBand. Like, she gave a very good description of how to do that second exercise. And I'm like, oh, I want to go try it and see what happens. Mm-hmm. I know.
I can't wait to try it.
On the list. Yeah. But she is super. Yeah. I totally agree with you. She is very, and I love that she comes at it a different way. You know, I mean, I think every physical therapist has a strength and, you know, hers is obviously mm-hmm. foot driven, and that's very important and like she said, kind of rare.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I gotta say, I mean I've only seen her twice, and the improvement that I have had is so marked. I mean, it's just, I feel so fortunate to have landed in her hands. So yeah.
Nice. Well, so what are your assignments? Do you have to do a lot of toe work?
I went to see her specifically to talk about bunions so that I'd sort of know where she was coming from, and because my back is so overwhelming to my everyday life, I'm like, okay, before we get to my feet, here's the deal with my back. And she just immediately started working on things. But because of the kinetic chain, we are getting down to my feet. So, So, all right. Well, calling all AMR cheerleaders. We are so excited to once again expand our brand ambassador program. And if you listen to this podcast on the reg, you've probably heard numerous conversations with our BAM ambassadors, as we call them, our badass mother runner ambassadors, who don't necessarily have to be moms. They help us promote and spread the word of our beloved community. They do things like posting about AMR assets like podcasts and programs and merchandise, and also our partners on social media. They moderate the Train Like a Mother Facebook training groups. They work on AMR booth at a race expo. test gear for reviews, and so much more. We are accepting applications until June 12. If you want to fill these shoes, please fill out the application. And this link will be in the show notes. It is anothermotherrunner.com/BAMRBassiter-application. And like I said, there'll be a link to that page in the show notes. Our podcast today was produced in St. Paul, Minnesota by Barry Medour from Fire on the Bluff. Yeah. Oh my gosh. Oh my gosh, Daphne was telling me yesterday, you know, she adores the cats. And she was like, Mom, you have to talk to them while I'm at school. You can't just pet them a little bit. You have to talk to them and you have to sing to them. So she's singing to the cats, right? She's making up this song. So I start making up a song. She goes, no, Mom, that's not the right song.
No, of course not. Of course not.
I'm just like, well, he seemed to like it just fine. So once she left the house, I sang to the cats. And I let her know when she got home from school. They seemed to like my singing just fine.